My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Dema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. And this show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food still is a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guests today are Mark Isbell and Chris Isbell of Isbell Farms in Arkansas. Isbell Farms has been always forward-minded and played an important role as a strong supporter of the American sake industry. Isbell Farms is a multi-generational family farm with a focus on the sustainable production of quality rice. And also, Isbell is the first American farm that produced sake mai, which means Japanese rice varieties developed specifically for sake production. And there are approximately 25 sake breweries in the U.S., and it is very exciting to see that number has been increasing. And these breweries often use cow roast rice, which is a table rice, because sake rice is not readily available in this country. And while cow roast has proven to be a right variety to produce high-quality sake, there's a solid demand for sake rice among American brewers. So today we'll discuss how a family farm in Arkansas started to grow Japanese rice, the types of sake rice they grow, a pioneering sake rice variety they have just developed, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan Needs is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Mark Isbell and Chris Isbell. Welcome.
Hi, Akiko. Nice to meet you.
All right. So this is Mark and Chris.
Thank you for inviting us to do this. We're excited about it.
Yeah. So Mark is Chris's son, and Chris has a very exciting story who started all everything. So we'll dig into that in a moment. But and also I have been hearing about Isbell Farms' name from different people. For example, Andrew Centofante of North American Sake Brewery joined us in episode 219 and said he uses your rice. And Brandon Dong, the brewmaster of Brooklyn Craft, kindly introduced us to you. So I'm very excited to have you here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you. And so tell us about your farm first. So what is the history of Isbell Farms?
Well, long ago, my great-grandfather, he was in the lumber business. He had sawmills. He had like six sons and five sawmills. And so as they cleared the land, they planted cotton. So that was the first generation in Arkansas of the farmers. And then my granddad came along and he grew cotton. My dad, after he got out of the Navy, after World War II, he started growing rice. So that's three, and I'm fourth generation. Mark would be fifth, and a grandson that is working on the farm. So that'd be six. So we've been doing this for quite a while.
Wow. Right. And then just to get the idea of your wealth of experience in growing rice, so what types of rice have you grown other than sake rice?
Yeah, so, first off, we're sitting here in the center of Arkansas, and Arkansas is actually the largest rice-growing state in the United States, with over half of the rice in the U.S. is grown here in Arkansas, with a substantial other amount grown in the adjacent states. So the Mid-South is typically known for long-grain varieties, which you'll find in the supermarket and a number of dishes at restaurants, and that sort of fills the primary role on the land here as the go-to crop. And so we have grown a lot of long grain in the past, And we continue to grow some for those markets as well. But years ago, and my dad can speak more to this, we started growing Japanese rice in the early 90s when I was just a kid. And that started with the Kashiokari, which eventually led us to the sake varieties that we grow today. And I'll let my dad speak more to the details of that experience.
Mm. Okay. So, yeah. So I heard that you are the very first Japanese rice farm that made the premium Koshihikari variety in the U.S. And people thought it was impossible, but it did. So, so when and how did you start growing Japanese rice?
I've always been curious, and I like any kind of research or anything like that I'm interested in. And so I found myself in a research, a group of researchers in Davis, California, or at Davis University of Sacramento. And there in the group of those researchers was a Japanese gentleman, and an economist, rice economist. And we struck up a conversation, and he was telling me that about Koshihikari. And of course, in the United States, you know, there's not really that much differentiation between which rice tastes the best. I mean, that's, you know, the long grain varieties are mostly just, they're all the same. And so, I, like I said, I'm curious. And he's explaining this to me, and he says, and by the way, he said, it will only grow in Japan. And so this was before the internet, before anything like that. So I come home and I get my globe off the table and I line up the latitude of Arkansas and Japan. And sure enough, we're right on the same latitude. And I thought, well, I bet it will grow in the United States. Mm. And so we secured some seed just to try it. And sure enough, it grew quite well. It was a lot more difficult to grow and harvest than our regular varieties, but it's the same way in Japan. It's difficult to harvest, that sort of thing. But the curiosity and stubbornness, I guess, is what started it all.
Mm. Right. Well, this is very impressive because, you know, you are busy farming and just grow things and harvest, but you went to that research conference or yeah, some kind of function, which is very impressive how curious you are.
Well, I was the only farmer there. When I walked in, they said, "Who are you with?" And I said, I'm a rice farmer. And so they gave me a tag that said grower, and wore that tag around, and all the researchers wanted to talk to him, and it was kind of like they'd never spoken with a real farmer before.
Right. So do you think it's changed now? More actual growers participate in that kind of academic research?
I haven't been to one in 2 or 3 years, but I don't think so. I think that there are very few growers that actually attend those.
Mm. Right. That's interesting. Okay. And so I heard that the U rice was eventually sold in Japan through the major convenience store chain called Family Mart. So, right. Yeah, it does. I mean, when I grew up, Japanese rice has to be from Japan. That's like so sacred that the one I heard about that it's impossible, like some miracle happened. So, yeah, but how did you get into the Japanese market?
Well, like you said at the beginning, somehow the other Japanese people thought that it was impossible to grow Koshihikari outside of Japan. And we didn't realize that when we started growing it. We grew it and managed to find someone that was willing to do a taste test and a trading company. It was a Nishimoto Trading Company out of Los Angeles. And they wanted to start marketing it here in the U.S., and the Japanese Americans, the Japanese visitors that are here in the U.S. Became very excited about it. So it got to be popular. But it was also all of the Japanese media became very interested in it. I never did, and I still to this day really don't understand why It was such a big deal. But I mean, we had every media outlet in Japan, I believe, has been to the farm. And, you know, magazines and newspapers and television stations, and the NHK even came and did a 90-minute documentary. They followed us through the whole year of growing the rice and selling the rice. And so the kids grew up in an atmosphere where we had limousines and helicopters and Greyhound buses with Japanese tourists, hundreds and hundreds of, media here on the farm. And we're just simple country people. But we became unisolated and more in tune to the global community. Mm. It was really an eye opener for me and for my wife, and the kids, like I said, grew up in that, and so they're more attuned to that today than I am even.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I'm sure it's as eye opening as you felt among Japanese people too, because like I said, you know, you kind of created a good earthquake. Oh, the Japanese rice can be grown outside of Japan. So, right. And since then, I heard you cultivated sake rice for over 20 years, and now your focus has been, that's shifted from Japanese table rice, which is koshihikari you started with, to sake rice. So how did you get into sake rice production?
Well, it was kind of a natural extension. I was taught probably 35 years ago how to do crosses and with different varieties, and that's part of the curiosity part of my psyche. But we still to this day have plots where we do experiments on different rices, different sorts of things. We do a lot of experimentation here. And so Japanese varieties, once we had the Koshihikari, where we started looking at other varieties, and at one time we had 40 different varieties growing in our experimental plots. One of those was Yamada Nishiki. Now, we didn't know what Yamada Nishiki was exactly. We were just growing the rice to look at it agronomically to see if it, it was something that we could grow easily enough, and it was not. But we took that row and we harvested it and put that in the freezer. And then years later, we were contacted to see if we had. I got a call from Takara out of Berkeley, California. And they asked me if I had Yamada Nishiki. And I said, we did. And they were excited. So they wanted us to grow some for them for trials. And so that's where it started with them.
Mm. Right. So for listeners who are not familiar with Takara, Takara is the Japanese sake producer headquartered in Japan, but they have a big production facility in California, I believe. Yes. And so I'm sure, but again, like Koshihikari, sake rice is too hard to grow in America. And then obviously you did it again. So yeah, that's amazing. So what kinds of sake rice do you grow outside other than Yamada Nishiki?
We have Omachi. That we're currently, there are some breweries that are doing some experimentation with, and I've been really successful with that. We also have Watari Bune and Goyaka Mangoku.
Mm, wow. So the major big hitters. So, by the way, Yamada Nishiki is known for being difficult to grow because it gets tall, but that's kind of like a rich flavor. I heard about 35% of whole rice, the sake is made with Yamada Nishiki. And so it's like quintessential, ideal rice. And the reason is that, maybe you can talk about the difference between sake rice and, table rice. What is the difference?
Well, the Yamada Nishiki has a chalky center, which they call a shinpaku. And that, once you've milled the rice down to 50% or more, as I understand it, that porosity of the grain allows the koji mold to penetrate completely and, you know, and turn the starches into sugar. All of that intrigues me because I'm curious.
Obviously. Is that by your nature? Like, since you're born, you're so curious like that?
I guess so. My dad told me one time I needed to stop dreaming. I said, well, you might as well just do away with me because if I have to stop dreaming, I don't think I want to live anymore. But, right.
Yeah, there are about, I heard it got over like 100 types of sake rice varieties. So you have like a way more to go, like 90 more to keep experimenting. Right. Okay. And actually, by the way, the Brandon Don of Fukunkura said he uses Carlos rice to make sake, and it tends to have a bigger taste and more umami than sake rice, like Yamada Nishiki, probably because of the higher protein content, like Chris just said. And I heard he recently ordered your omachi rice. Is that right?
Mark can speak to that better than I can.
Yes, so they made a good batch of omachi-based sake back earlier in the year that we had the opportunity to taste test, and it was certainly fantastic. I was very glad to see. They've got a great brewery there and doing some excellent work, and we look forward to doing more work with the omachi with them.
Mm, right. So how does it work? So you work with breweries and ask, you just give them a trial batch, like some grains, and then they try make sake, and if they like it, they order. Well, how does it work? If I was a brewer, how can I ask you to grow something?
Sure. So as you are aware, the the process for milling sake mai is a bit more involved than milling table rice. And so depending on the milling ratio needed, we send that rice from here in Arkansas where it's milled to 90% or about table rice standards. And we send that up to Blake Richardson in Minnesota, who has a sake mill there. And we work closely with him to then distribute that out to the craft brewers around the United States. And so we maintain relationships with a number of those craft brewers as well as he does as well. But yeah, when someone wants to try something like that, we're more than happy to provide a sample and get that to them and try it out.
Mm, right. Yeah, by the way, Blake Richardson, I am hoping to have him on the show sometime soon because he is a sake brewer and a Motoi sake brewery, and also he is an expert milling sake rice, which is, I think, is he the only one who can do that kind of milling, sake-specific milling in this country?
Certainly the only one east of the Rockies. I know there are some California breweries that do mill sake rice. But he's the one here east of the Rockies that currently does that. And yeah, Blake is incredibly knowledgeable, a very good person. And he started his journey with sake back long before it became in vogue here in the United States, as it seems to have done more recently. And I think he's a large contributor to the to the good trajectory that sake has here in the United States now.
Mm, right. Okay. And by the way, because you said that it's a little harder to grow Yamada Nishiki. And, so what is the difference between sake rice, table rice in terms of the farming process? Like, is sake rice harder to grow?
You want me to take that, Mark?
Sure. I'll be glad to add some as well, but I'll let you talk about our experiences harvesting this year, which were certainly none too easy.
It's rice, and we plant it, and grow it, get it started off. But there are subtleties that we look at. We don't want the protein level to be very high, and so we alter our our nutrient inputs based on that. And it does grow really tall. It's extremely hard to harvest, but fortunately, our history has given us some skills in doing that. We have the machinery, our combines and everything are purchased with the idea that the crop is going to be difficult to harvest. And so we have the headers, the things like that. Most people don't have those, but we are set up to harvest difficult varieties. My dad, we started out with a variety that is called Arc Rose, which is akin to Cow Rose. And in those days, that Arc Rose was extremely tall and difficult to harvest. And so I've kind of cut my teeth on difficult varieties. But your modern Ashiki does have its own little special problems. The straw is very wiry, wants to wrap around everything it touches on the combine. And so we've had, some trials and errors, but it's doable, and we do it and we'll continue to do it.
Mm, right. And what about the other varieties? Because what I heard, like Omachi, if you look for some like very strong rice rich flavor, that's Omachi. Versus Yamada Nishiki, it's more like a fragrance. But you have 500 mangoku, that's like a Niigata-specific, very light, airy kind of sake style. And the Wataribune is a parent of Yamada Nishiki. All those, each of sake rice has a very specific personality. So which one is the hardest? Is Yamada Nishiki the hardest?
Mark, you...
Yeah, so I mean, Yamada Nishiki is the one that we've grown at the greatest scale at this point. And to date, I would definitely say it's most difficult. The other thing that really drives the difficulty in working with specialty products like that is that we do have to maintain our own seed production. So we have to think not only of what will the market need for production this year, but what might the market need 3 years from now that we need to be producing? And then when you're managing multiple varieties, you also have to be able to keep those clean and distinct and separate from one another in storage and in production. So there are a number of challenges that come just out of that.
Right. So are there many breweries interested in each of those sake rice varieties?
So far, the Omachi is the one that we've received the most inquiries about, and it's something we've still done at quite a small level when compared to the Yamada, but we've certainly started to get interest in the other ones. We don't have a large amount of the other ones to distribute yet, but as we see the desire for those grow, we'll certainly begin to scale those further.
Interesting. Do you know why they like Omachi more than Yamada Nishiki?
You know, I think primarily the marketplace was just ready to try something new. So much of the basic sake out there for years has been made from cow rose, and they've done quite a good job of it. There are a lot of artisans out there that take that and do really good work. The Yamada Nishiki comes on the scene, and that provides something new that's also very old that they can latch onto and practice their art. But, just like any artist, a new canvas creates new opportunities, and the Omachi provides that new canvas for some of these brewers.
Right. Interesting. I can't wait to see more new products using your rice. That could be very interesting, a diversity of the flavors made in America. So, yeah. So, how many customers do you have, by the way, right now?
So, that's a hard question to answer exactly, because a lot of the craft brewing distribution that we do does go through Blake. And but I can say that it has certainly grown in the past couple of years. And when you're talking sizable customers, those you could count on one hand. But when you talk about those who are making small batches, everything from homebrew up to, you know, up to some craft brewers, local breweries, you know, that becomes more substantial, and we see growth in both number and volume. And what's really interesting from our vantage point is we get to see these home brewers begin to inquire and gain interest. And, you know, a few years later, you might see those develop into something even more. And so it's been an interesting perspective to watch the industry grow, you know, over the last few years, just from the vantage point of, you know, providing them with their rice.
Interesting. Yeah, in this country, you can home brew, not in Japan. So maybe I should consider starting my own sake brewing at home. So I'll contact you. But are there any farms doing, producing sake rice in the U.S. right now?
So here in Arkansas, definitely not, certainly that I'm not aware of. There is a company out of California that works with some farmers, I suppose, to create some other sake varieties. I'm not sure how widely they distribute or what the details are on that. But it's certainly no more than a handful in the United States and east of the Rockies, as far as I know. We're the only ones.
Right. Well, Japan is a very long, vertically long country, but is Arkansas suited to grow Japanese sake rice, you think?
So I know the answer to be yes, because, you know, we have grown it, and we've been able to work with some excellent brewers who've created some fantastic sakes out of it. From you know, from Blake there in Minnesota to Kara to Sake One, who created a fantastic sake here this past summer, and a whole lot of others that I hate to try to list any because I can't list all of the ones, but they're doing some great work. But you know, by experience, I can say yes, it is a great place. But then also my curiosity, which I suppose I got from my father, kicks in as well. And I want to know, why is that? And so, whereas he said he picked up a globe years ago to make that connection, times have changed a bit. So I pulled up Google Earth and started looking at the latitudes instead, which allowed me to fairly easily strike a line across the map. And our farm is located, almost at the identical latitude of Hyogo. And so, there's a lot of climatic issues that we have in common. It's not exactly the same, but you know, if not perfectly scientifically, at least poetically, I believe there's some truth into the fact that means something about what can be done with sake rice here.
Right. Well, the Hyogo Prefecture is the home of Yamada Nishiki, and also Omachi is close. It's from Okayama Prefecture, which is close to Hyogo. So, yeah, that totally makes sense. Okay. So we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll discuss the new variety of sake rice Isabel Farms has recently developed. So please stay with us.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Arati Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough, and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guests today are Mark and Chris Isabel of Isabel Farms in Arkansas. The multi-generational family farm sustainably produces Japanese sake rice, which is extremely hard to find in America. So So let's, I'm just very excited to talk, discuss this. So I heard that you have developed a new sake variety called the Somai. So could you tell us what it is and why you developed it?
So yeah, I'll be glad to take that. I do want to be clear, while we have done a lot of research and a lot of development in varieties here on the farm, the Somai is actually derived from a southern medium grain that was initially developed out of our university, much like the Calrose varieties in California are developed there in their research stations and such. And so what we've done is identify that and adapt that to use in sake. We've figured if other medium grains from other parts of the world, which this is a medium grain, have utility and potential as sake rice, then perhaps this one will as well. And so we began experimenting with that first with Blake, and he made a really good batch with it. And then we began distributing that even wider, more recently, with the knowledge that our kind of our heart and soul when it comes to growing sake rice is focused on the Yamada Nishiki and the premium varieties. But we realize that the marketplace out there has a need for more cost-effective solutions for other sakes that can still be very good without necessarily being using the historical grains like Yamada Nishiki and falling in that distinct top tier. And so the Somai is our answer to that, so that we can provide our customers with, first of all, the really high quality stuff, but also this very good quality stuff that also provides another canvas that I think a number of brewers out there are just doing a fantastic job with.
So first of all, what's the price difference? I mean, regular sake rice versus, you know, other rice. Is that way more expensive because it's harder to produce?
I would not want to go into numbers, honestly, but I will say that there's a substantial difference between the premium sake varieties and what you're familiar with table rice. Mm. Just because it is very difficult to grow, the yields are significantly less. So you're tying up the same amount of land. You're requiring significantly more work, and you're receiving substantially less poundage from that field, at the end of the harvest. So the price has to be substantially more just to be at a break even with other, long grain varieties. And then, of course, it's a premium product that we believe, necessitates some degree of premium.
Mm, so this is very exciting because it's really is going to expand the opportunities of sake brewing in this country because of the price. And also, what's the difference between, say, the texture or any flavor in terms of, comparison with Calrose and other sake rice? How do you describe Somai's taste and flavor?
Are we referring to it as a table rice or as a sake rice?
Oh, you can do both. That's awesome even.
So I would say that when it comes to amylose and stickiness, the Somai is going to be less sticky when it comes to a table rice. But when it comes to the sake, all I can say is that I really enjoyed the one I have. I'm not a sommelier. I don't have a broad vocabulary when it comes to the nuances of the different sake varieties, or the different tastes that come out of a sake. But I can say it was really enjoyable. Perhaps my dad would have more color to add to that.
I was just really impressed with the softness of it. I was expecting something a little more harsh, and I'm not an expert either by any means, but it was fruity and it was soft, and I was not expecting that. I was really impressed with it.
Mm, wow, interesting. So, what products made with Somai right now, but available in the market because I want to try that.
Sure. So first of all, if you can make it to Minneapolis and go to Moto E, you absolutely need to visit our friend Blake Richardson's Izakaya restaurant and his craft brewery there in downtown Minneapolis. And he's got an excellent product that should be, I got a chance to try it out of the tank before it was released here back a couple months ago while I was up there. So I'm assuming he'll have that on tap before too long. That would be the first place I would point you. I believe that Proper Sake out of Nashville is making some out of the Somai. And Colorado Sake out of Denver is creating a number of different products using Somai.
Wow.
And there are others as well, but I can't name an exhaustive list off the top of my head.
Right. One thing this may be the, you know, sake one in Oregon. Is it naginata made with the somai?
No.
No, the naginata would be made from our Yamada Nishiki.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, I saw the description. That was really amazing too. So, okay. Well, but that's Yamada Nishiki?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that I just found it, so let me read that because I was impressed. So this is not somai, but Yamada Nishiki made by Isabel Farms, and it's Naginata Junmai Daigincho from Sakewan in Oregon. And it's Naginata is extremely limited production sake crafted by Brewmaster in Oregon, and the bright, fruity aromas, blueberry, banana, and a grape, and balanced by subtle dryness and flavor of Fuji apple, melon, and guava. And hints of pepper and licorice layer in the background, leading to smooth and lingering finish. That sounds like you really grew amazing rice.
Well, I have to say that we certainly were happy to contribute the rice to that, and to whatever degree that contributed to the end product, we're grateful for that. But the Toji there clearly put a lot of hard work and has a lot of knowledge and craft that was able to bring about an excellent project there. And I'll let my dad tell, but we actually received the first bottle from his first pressing of that as a gift from them recently. And that was pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. Sake is known for human products too. Like Toji contributes a lot.
Takumi.
Right. Takumi Kuwabara. Mm-hmm. That's his name.
And Steve Velisky, Mark, is that how you pronounce that?
But I'm confident that he'll forgive us for not being able to accurately pronounce his name, but I'll be happy to spell it out for you. So, but the great organization making a great sake there. The I just wish there was more of it. That's something I wish we could get more out there. But it's incredible product.
Right. Yeah, Sakewan has a good history to produce sake in this country. So, by the way, so Jake Merrick of Sequoia Sake joined us on episode 240 and talked about his new Sequoia rice, which he developed with the UC Davis, like you worked with them. So what do you think of the idea of developing new rice varieties that are suitable to American soil, as you and Jake have done?
So I've not had the opportunity, as far as I know, to meet Jake. My sister Whitney and brother-in-law Jeremy were out at San Francisco Sake Day back here, I guess around the 1st of October, and I believe they had the opportunity to meet him, and potentially I think they visited his brewery as well. So I'm intrigued to hear that he's developed a rice. I don't know much about that. We do not work with him specifically, but it's always great to get to know others out there who are trying to develop the sake rice industry and the sake industry in general, and learn what can be done. You know, I think there will always be a place for the traditional varieties, the Yamada Nishiki being the primary one in that. I think there's so much we have to honor and respect about the history of Japanese culture and what they've done to create those products, that we really first of all want to focus on, giving credit to that, continuing to grow that, and continuing to provide that product for brewers so that they can build on centuries old histories there of tradition. I do think there's also a place to explore new opportunities. I think that'll always be exciting, but there definitely has to be a balance between what we can do that's new while also honoring that tradition and history.
Right. I mean, like when you built Somai, there is a strong kind of DNA in that medium grain rice, right? So there is always opportunity for the plant itself to stay strong, and it's just quite easy to grow. So yeah, I can't wait to see what you're going to develop from now on. So, but you are very close to the research community and often involved in new projects. So are you working on any new project to develop another new sake rice?
Well, as my dad mentioned before, he learned to do rice variety development many years ago. The somewhat ironic thing is on my part is I'm incredibly allergic to rice pollen. So the time of year that you actually do that sort of thing, I'm not actually able to go out into the field. It's not a very wide window, thankfully, but I'm not able to participate in that type of project. So, you know, he continually works with things like that. We aren't currently working with any researchers to develop new varieties. I think it's a small enough marketplace that you know, we're not seeing researchers go that direction yet, but, you know, we're always open to look at what's next and what we can do to help contribute to the industry by working on things like that.
Right. And you've been a great partner of the sake brewers community. So, and there is increasingly more high quality Japanese sake made in America. So what do you think of the future of sake made in America?
I'll let my dad add to this as well, for sure. But I think it's bright. You know, I think there's some excellent work being done with the North American Sake Brewers Association now in bringing all these breweries together and to learn about new things, to just create community. I was able myself to attend, as I mentioned before, my sister and brother-in-law attended Sake Day in San Francisco. I attended the one in San Diego, and I know there are a number of other celebrations around the United States. It's a growing community, and it's a great community to be a part of. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of fun being had there, and there's this feeling of something new and exciting that I think the customers can really latch onto. And so I think the future is bright. I think there's a lot of opportunity, and we certainly want to be in the position to help facilitate the growth of that and to partner with any brewers out there that, you know, are growing themselves.
Right. Yeah, you are. You guys are very important for the community. So, yeah, that's amazing. So one thing I really have to mention, you are very sustainable, right? So you're pretty committed to sustainable farming. So, and for example, you are a recipient of the 2016 Community to Quality Award from the American Carbon Registry. So how do you practice sustainability?
So there are a number of things that we do on our farm that that relate to sustainability. First of all, you know, dating back to when I was a kid and my father and grandfather began trying to make the farm more efficient, they developed the farm in a way that we use as much as two-thirds less water than traditional farming methods. And this is done through a process known as zero grade, where the fields are made completely flat. And then over the years, building on that, we've been able to create other new or to participate in other irrigation techniques, one of which is known as alternate wetting and drying. And anyone who's ever been around a rice field knows that it's typically flooded, but in AWD, as we call it, alternate wetting and drying, we allow that to become dry for a period in the summer. Not a very long period, but long enough so that the soil changes its biochemistry in such a way that it produces less methane. And so by doing that, we're able to minimize the methane creation from that inundated soil by 60%+. And in doing so, back in 2016, we were able to create some carbon offsets. And that's not a very lucrative process, but it really certainly taught us what can be done. And, you know, we're grateful for the opportunity to contribute not only to water savings, but also to methane reduction. And we continue to look for ways that we can build on that. One of those is solar electricity, which we installed just over three years ago, I believe, which provides about a third of our electricity here on the farm. And, you know, finally, this doesn't encompass everything, but the other thing that really becomes apparent this time of year is the biodiversity that we're able to create through our fields by flooding them in the winter. We happen to be just in the middle of the Mississippi flyway for migrating waterfowl. And our fields provide resting areas and places for those ducks and geese to stop over. And fortunately or unfortunately, harvest machinery is not perfect. And so there's always leftover grains on the ground for the ducks and the geese to forage for. And they're always able to take advantage of those calories as they make their flight further south. So, you know, those are just a few of the things. And I'm sure my dad has some thoughts on that too.
Well, I like what we're doing with the methane reduction. And, you know, for years and years, we've worked on trying to reduce our water use, and especially our groundwater, our aquifer water. If we can reduce that, then we're saving that water for the future for our grandchildren. And the methane, the solar, with all those things, we're able to say that our sake rice is carbon neutral. Mm. So we can use that. And I like that. I think that future is upon us.
Right. Wow. It's even better, carbon neutral sake rice. So that's great. Congratulations. That's a lot of research and investment. And I've been really learning. You're always forward-minded. So on this end, it's just amazing what you've done about sustainability.
Well, thank you. I consider myself a little strange, but but forward-thinking sounds better. Thank you very much.
It's called pioneering. So what are your plans and dreams?
Personally, I want to see our farm to be where we can market our crops. I'd like to see where we can market our crops without having to go to the normal marketplace, to have specialty crops that we can grow on the entire farm and not have to deal with what everybody else deals with. And like I said, I want to see my children and grandchildren, you know, have something very special. And that doesn't just happen. I mean, that takes years and years. And so we're kind of looking over the hill a little bit at the horizon to see what's coming and trying to put ourselves in a position to take advantage of that when it gets here, if it does get here. And if it doesn't, it's been good practice. So that's kind of the way I look at things. You look further into the future, maybe, than most people try to, and see if you can establish yourself in a positive way.
Mm, right. Well, especially farming is very kind of, in good way, unpredictable. There are a lot of technology opportunities and climate issues and a lot to conquer, but it's very exciting. It's not farming in 50 years ago. Something is very challenging, but very interesting field. So, yeah, so please do keep me posted. And Mark, what is your plans and dreams?
Well, I mean, when it comes to the farm, as you mentioned before, farming doesn't look the way it did 50 years ago. There's been a lot of growth and consolidation amongst farms. They have to get bigger and bigger in order to be profitable, and that's okay. But my hope is to not necessarily get bigger, but just to become better at what we do on the ground that we already manage, and to become more efficient with that. And so, as you've probably learned through this conversation with both of us so far, we're not the status quo, and we don't really want to do that. And so we don't want to go out and just try to do as much of the same, try to win the game by just doing more, but try to find those good opportunities like working with sake brewers and other specialty markets so that, we can do it a different way. And it's more fun that way for us. It's not right for everybody, but it's more fun for us. And, I really enjoy getting to know and work with a lot of the people in the industry, and I want to see more of that take place. And so I want to see us continue to create a farm that has resilience and that always has, hope for something, something new and exciting.
Right. You really have a unique space in this whole agricultural activities in the whole country. So yeah, that's very exciting. So please do keep me posted.
Something that we haven't mentioned is this is a family farm. It's not only myself and Mark, but our son-in-law, Jeremy Jones, and my wife, and my nephew, Shane Isabel. And that's the partnership. But we have gotten more involved in social media, and our daughter, Whitney, has come into play there very strongly, and her grandson, Harrison, our granddaughter, Elena, and my wife, Mark's wife, Marta, and even the kids did a little special thing for Easter, his children. So that is very important to me, that everybody's coming together. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing, even though you're not involved directly on the farm with it.
Right. It's a very strong team, I can see. So, yeah, I'm sure your grandchildren and all this whole family are looking ahead, because you see the whole future, right? They're carrying the future. So
we're trying to see it.
Right. Well, it's so funny. So many sake brewers just go out and work with somebody else and come back, and they solidify the tradition. So maybe that's the way to go. All right. So where can we find your updates online and on social media?
So on Instagram, we're at Isabel Farms. On Twitter, we're at the same, at Isabel Farms. On Facebook, I suppose someone must have beat us to that handle. So I think it's at Isabel Farms Rice. And then YouTube, I believe, is, you can get there through some of those other platforms. I would go to the Facebook page. I believe it's Isabel Farms there as well. So, those are our handles. So also our website, isabelfarms.com.
Yeah, your website is full of resources. And I learned about your zero gray rice farming. It's like very impressive, beautiful scenery. And also what you do is very interesting too. So, all right. So thank you so much for joining us, Chris and Mark.
Yeah. And Akiko, if I could just add too, you're certainly welcome to visit us here at any point. And, as my dad mentioned earlier, we've had thousands of visitors through the years, and we're always happy to take one or two more. So, contact us, and we'll be glad to facilitate that.
Definitely. Wow.
Great. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you at the farm.
Great.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Amin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you.
For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.